Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder what could possibly be signaling that inflation is peaking right now. We've got that. The CPI report, talk about a swing and a miss on that one. Oh boy, I was way off on my call on that. We got economic data, a whole bunch of other stuff, but let's just get into our headline topic. What could possibly be signaling inflation is peaking? Well, I was thinking about the supply chains and how prices move through the factory system to the end consumer. And you know, thought, well, there's got to be some sort of definable lag. And so I messaged my buddy, Julian Biddle, and he's great with charts. In fact, I couldn't get a chart from him on this, but we got another one of his charts to look at from before. And I said, hey, Julian, can you figure out where ISM prices paid peak and then where the CPI peaks? I said, I think it's about 1 to 3 months. And he wrote back and he says, you're right. He's like, on average over the last 20 years, he ran 20 years of history. He said the CPI lags the ISM prices paid by 2 months. So now the question is, when did the ISM prices paid peak? Well, we can go right to the ISM website. It's kind of fun when you do macro, you get to be a bit of a detective, and you can go back to February of this year, and you can see that 73% of firms reported higher prices. Again, this is a manufacturing survey, and the index peaked at 86.0, which is a very, very high print. We've talked about that in prior shows. And even though the March one is very close, it is still lower. And what is the likeliness that future reports are going to be lower? Well, you start seeing that when you get up here in the 70 some percent of firms reporting higher prices and the index up in the mid 80s, you're unlikely to continue to see that as a sustainable increase. So assuming that the February 2021 print of the ISM was the high, obviously we'll know in the months that come. Well, if we add 2 months, that means the April print of the CPI is likely to be the high. It could be May, could be March. We don't know, but it's very, very close. And so we did have one chart from Julian that we can go look at, which is this ISM prices paid index versus a 10-year treasury yield. And so what does that tell us? Well, we've looked at this before, and what we know is when the ISM peaks, well, treasury yields are usually peaking with it. And that starts to make sense because if the bond market is so big and so deep and all-knowing, then what would it start to figure out? That inflation's peaking. And that might mean that, hey, does that mean that perhaps treasury yields tend to peak before the consumer price index? Great question. I had that question as well. So I pulled 30-year treasury yields against consumer price index. Why do I pick 30 instead of 10? They're just more volatile, so we should see a little bit more of a little more price action going on. And if we kind of look here post-Great Financial Crisis, we can see the consumer price index peaked and then yields peaked. So, you know, yields didn't beat it. But here you see in the next cycle, yields are peaking in red before the CPI peaks and goes down. Here yields peak before the CPI peaks. Here, yields are peaking before the CPI peaks. Here, it's a little bit after, unless you count this other peak down here. And so now, what are we seeing in yields? Well, they're starting to top. And so it's suggesting that perhaps there is an indication that we are seeing peak inflation in April. Right now, as we speak, this could be the peak inflation. And then that would indicate the treasury yields are headed lower, the dollar's headed higher, crude oil likely headed lower, and that the 20-year relationship of that two-month lag is spot on. Could it be 3 months? Could be. Now, on a follow-up from yesterday's show, I received some feedback saying, well, wait a minute. So do you think that we're 1 to 2 years from yields bottoming? And I want you to understand that I was just going over Dr. Lacey Hunt's report. Now, you always have to understand who's writing the report or who's speaking, you know, where they are from a management perspective or research perspective, where they fit. So what is Dr. Lacey Hunt? What does he do professionally? He's a long only, meaning he only plays the upside. So that would mean he's only on the bullish view. Institutional means he doesn't work for retail investors. He only works for institutions. which means his timeline from an investment perspective is longer. So like a hedge funds are chasing quarter to quarter, he's probably running 3, maybe 5 year windows is what his target is as an institutional manager. And what does he manage? US treasuries. So he's only looking to buy treasuries that are going up. That's what his goal is to figure out. And so from his perspective, if 2 years from now is the cyclical bottom, then he's cool, right? So he's got a 3 year window. How would he invest his portfolio that he's managing? Well, he would be toward the long end of the curve because he's looking for price appreciation when interest rates go down. And what else does he want? Well, he wants yield. And why would he want yield? Because he's going to reinvest those in new bonds that are being issued. So, you know, that's where he's looking at. So he's looking at this a cyclical bottom in yields. And is that true that we can go back and look at recessions and see yields bottom some point after? You see here the gray is recessions, and then there's a bottom in yields in gray, recession, bottom in yield. So he's looking out a lot further. Now, can there be bottoms in yields before that? Well, absolutely. And in this case, there's going to be. And why do we know that? Well, because the ISM is telling us it's peaking and heading lower. We can go back to the last recession and we can see that when ISM peaked and came down, yields came down with it. So he's just looking out further. His view was not exactly mine. I do believe there will be a bottom sooner. And if you start to think about why would that happen, is there's a lot of people in the inflation camp, and they got their investments in the inflation camp. And so that means that at some point when the narrative changes and they see that it's really deflationary, well, they're going to come to the kingdom. And there's a lot of them over there and a very few of us over here. And so that's very bullish for bonds. Of course, we have the Fed buying. That's something we haven't seen really in past recessions. They were late into the great financial crisis. So this is really the first time we're seeing them buy through the recession. So there's a lot of indication that we will see not only a move down as the inflation trade flips, but there will be a cyclical bottom which occurs later. And so why does that occur later? Well, because households and businesses, their balance sheets are destroyed, right? I mean, think back to the great financial crisis. People were losing their homes, they're losing their jobs. And it just takes like 2 years, you know, for people to get back on their feet. And then they need to start borrowing again. And how do you get them to help them get back on their feet and then start borrowing again? Well, you need interest rates to go only one direction, and that is down. So he's looking at it from a different time frame. My time frame on my bond call is much, much, much shorter. But still, even if you look out from his research, you know, hey, 2 years from now, there'll probably be another bottom in yields. So what will happen is yields will probably go down. Like I believe they will come back up and then they'll be rejected again and head lower. All right, let's take a look at the consumer price index. Because, man, I was totally, totally wrong about that. I thought we were going to get like just 2 or maybe slightly over 2, and we got 2.6%. But where did it come from? And you can look here, we're on the BLS website, and it's pretty much gasoline. And you see gasoline, all types, up 22.5% from this time last year. That is a substantial move higher to drive the CPI up. And you'll notice, yeah, there's some things like food is up 3.5% and broad energy is up 4%. But some of these other things are not up a whole lot. I don't know why used cars are up. I'm baffled by people who are out buying used cars when the economy was shut down, but I guess they did. But you see there's some negative prints here. That's gonna happen. So was this broad-based inflation? No, it was concentrated largely in gasoline. Now, is that actually good for the economy? Not really at all. I mean, think about this, right? You've been working from home, or maybe you lost your job. And now all of a sudden your employer says, hey, you got to come back to work, or you find a job, or your former employer says, hey, you know, your job's coming back. What's the first thing you're going to have to do? Go to work. And what are you going to do? You're going to go to that gas station and fill up. And guess what that price is going to be? It's going to be more. And that is a challenge. See, when you're trying to get out of a slowdown in the economy or recession, depression, whatever it is where you're in, right? Whatever the economy is in at the time, you don't want higher commodity prices. You don't want higher food. You don't want higher energy because consumers have to pay for those things. And so they actually become a drag on their finances and their ability to have money for discretionary spending. So this is actually not a good sign that we're seeing the CPI with a huge boost in gasoline prices. Now let's go on and look at some charts. And so was this move higher in the CPI really that big of a deal? Well, it's back at 2.6%, which is marginally higher than it was in January 2020 and still below where it was in July 2018. So yeah, I mean, it is a big move higher, but it's kind of right where it was between 2017 and 2020. So it's right back to, you know, prior 3 years, not a big difference. But when you start taking out the food and energy and you look at core did not go up hardly at all. It's at 1.6, which is nothing. It was at 1.6 in November. So there was a bit of a bounce here in the core CPI. And overall, what you find is the headline CPI, which is this, eventually follows the core. And that makes sense because we can likely assume that these higher fuel prices are not going to lead to excess discretionary spending. And so when we look at the money multiplier, which we now only get to look at once a month, what can we assume from that higher CPI print? That the stimulus probably had a bump in the M2. So remember, you know, when we see the money multiplier, which is in blue, head down, we know that the demand for money is growing more proportional than the money supply. So now we can assume, at least in March, with all the stimulus money, that perhaps the M2 is going to show a pretty big print, and this blue line will go up a bit and sort of add some validation to the move higher in the CPI. Now, is that short-term or long-term? Well, it's absolutely transitory, because once the stimulus checks are all done and gone, the Fed's not going to quit doing QE. Now, how do we know they're not going to quit doing QE? Well, we got an updated QE schedule on Tuesday, and they gave us a month-long schedule, which I was kind of surprised they did, because we just did a show where the Fed said, hey, we're looking at, you know, trimming back the length of our schedule and maybe adjusting it. There were no changes in here that I was able to determine. And then I thought about, why would they print out a whole month when they said they're going to make adjustments to it? One, they're probably waiting for the next FOMC meeting to do that and let Powell do a formal announcement. But how about the other reason? Is the CPI just printed at 2.6? And remember, the Fed said when we get inflation sustained over 2%, we're going to hike rates. And everyone freaked out. Oh my God, this now it's over 2%. And the bond market rallied on that news. But what is this data here? What does this tell you? What is the Fed telling you here? Hey, we're not going to change QE for 30 days. We told you we're not going to. Here's the proof. So I think that's why they did it. Let's take a look at the economic data. There's some interesting stuff going on here, of course. We've go back to Tuesday where we got the CPI at 2.6. We looked at that, the core CPI at 1.6%. But what's really interesting in this report was real earnings. Now, when you see the term real, it means inflation adjusted. Just substitute it out and say, that's inflation adjusted earnings. Now, month over month was up 0.1%. The prior month was down 1.2%. And you can kind of imagine there's something in here to do with stimulus checks potentially helping boost this number. But that doesn't give us the year over year number. Well, I have the year over year number. Ready for this? Minus 4.5%. So, you know, when you think of inflation and you think of money printing, which is what most people believe the Fed is doing, there are people even that believe that stimulus checks are printed money, that they don't believe it's borrowed money, which it is. Well, if you're going to see broad-based inflation and you're going to see a sustainability of broad-based inflation, what do you need from the consumer standpoint to afford it, to be able to pay for those higher prices, right? Well, if inflation adjusted earnings are down 4.5%, what does that tell you about the broad economy? It tells you consumers are going to reject higher prices because they don't have the money. And then when you factor, wait a second, you just showed us the gasoline prices are way up. Yeah. So if consumers have less money and have to put more money toward filling up their vehicles, that means they're going to have even less money for other stuff. And again, that's how you know, you can see this, you know, looks like a liquidity trap, right? There's less money for consumers where there's other money is going in other places and they can't afford those higher prices, which is why they get rejected. So that's very interesting. to see that. The Redbook year over year, this is retail sales. I think we got that coming tomorrow. Redbook for the week, year over year was up 13%. And so what we should expect is a pretty big retail sales number tomorrow. The 30-year bond auction went really well. A lot of people were worried about this. But as you know, we looked at the dealer holdings and they were declining. Now, there wasn't some 0% low yield, but there doesn't need to be. There's plenty of 30-year bonds in the hands of the dealers. But this was a very strong auction. Primary dealers actually took $4.1 billion. And keep in mind, the Fed is buying 10.5%. So that's a 6.4% or $6.4 billion shortfall that, again, is going to have to get sourced either from the dealer inventories or the markets to feed the commercial banks who feed the Fed those bonds through the quantitative easing process. The bid to cover was strong. Overall, great auction, and the market actually responded to that. Let's see what's going on in South Korea. Export prices, import prices. This is where you look at inflation, and you see export prices up 5.6%, import prices up 9%. And so that validates the CPI. So we're seeing, the cost of energy is flowing into consumer goods. The question is, again, can consumers actually maintain that and afford it? And it doesn't appear they're going to be able to for long. Now, I'm not going to worry about machine orders out of Japan. This is usually a very volatile statistic. And how about Spanish CPI year over year, flat at 1.3% from the prior month? Still pretty, again, there's definitely inflation going on there. How about mortgage applications? This is interesting, down 3.7%. However, from the recent peak in January, they're down 32%. So you're looking at, when you think about that, what is that telling you from the consumer side? Well, if you're looking to refi or potentially refi or cash out refi, what is this telling you? That their borrowers are rejecting higher rates. What does it tell you from the new home purchaser? They too are rejecting higher rates. So declining mortgage applications is not a plus to say that higher interest rates can be absorbed. It's telling you just the opposite. It's telling you the market is saying no, too high, which will put pressure again, as I believe, on the banks to buy more of the long bond to drive rates back down so they can get people in, because banks make a ton of money on mortgages. We know that due to all the fees and everything. Now, what should we expect from the import and export prices in the US? Well, we should expect them to be up. Export prices were up 9.1%, which is huge. And import prices were up 6.9%, again, validating what we see in the CPI report. And then we've got the crude oil inventory report. And this was a great report. Crude oil inventories were down 5.9 million. Now, imports were also down. I don't know if there was a supply chain issue, if it had to do with the Suez Canal being backed up. I don't know. But the crude oil inventories dropped, and distillate stocks were down. This, think of this as jet fuel, diesel fuel, stuff like that. This was down. And then gasoline inventories up only 309,000. So it's showing, you're getting some perspective here from the crude oil report that, hey, the economy is coming back to life. Of course, the question will be tomorrow is, what does all of the unemployment statistics look like? Because, we've been running 700,000 prints, and I have a hunch that that's not going down substantially. At least that's, maybe I'll be as wrong as I was on the CPI, so we'll see tomorrow. But the market's been ignoring that. And the only question is, how long will the market continue to ignore all these people that are headed back to work and then losing their job again because of the weak economy? We'll talk more about all this on Friday for the macro show. And if I get things done for tomorrow, hopefully we'll have a Momentum Timer Pro issue out for you. Thanks for being fans. Thanks for watching. I'll see you on Friday. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or other advice. This material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the value of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.